Now we're going to take this discussion of politics and other breaking news to the members of our Reporters Roundtable. Joining me now are Erin Aubrey Kaplan of the Los Angeles Times, Katie Rechtall of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, and Chandra Thomas of Atlanta Magazine. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks.
So we just heard Congressman James Clyburn argue that superdelegates have an important role in choosing the Democratic nominee. And as you guys talk to folks in your areas, in the field, how do they feel about that idea that superdelegates could decide the election? Katie, are you hearing anything either from political officials or from citizens?
I think political officials feel like it's a nice little argument, that it's a nice wonky argument to have. But the average citizen that I've been talking to feels like either superdelegates are something they just don't want to even bother with right now, or else it's something that yet again could rig sort of the election in a way when they thought that they were in a democratic process. So I think it's the discussion, the real discussion, I think, will come as we get closer and closer to the convention. It becomes clear how much they're going to play a role.
Erin, the members of the Congressional Black Caucus seem divided, some of them divided over their own commitments that they made before.
Right.
How do you think this is going to affect the race?
That's a really good question. This all seems so fluid. I think that I agree with Katie. The folks here, people on the ground, are not talking about superdelegates at all. They're talking about the race and Obama's growing momentum, the M word, seems to be real. And that seems death-consuming people. The fact that, for example, our representative out here, Maxine Waters, has endorsed Clinton, for one, no one seems to be paying any attention to that. Our local black paper here, the LA Sentinel, has completely endorsed Obama. And that's what everyone's focused on. And I think it's very, people are still rather confused about the role of superdelegates. They, as the congressman explained, they reflect the will of the people. But if the will of the people is not all that clear, but, you know, what happens then? We're still not sure what role they'll play.
And when you look at Georgia, Chandra, you're at Atlanta Magazine, there has been a lot of talk about John Lewis, and the question is whether or not John Lewis is actually going to switch his support to the Obama campaign. How do people there feel, given that John Lewis's district went 3-1 for Obama?
Well, I've actually received a petition via email where several people were actually vying for Congressman Lewis to change his vote. And I think that speaks to the will of the people. And I think that what they're saying is they want the congressman to respond to the will of his constituents.
It seems like a lot of the action on this is coming out of the South, coming out of the traditional black voting districts in the South. How plugged in are Atlantans this time around to the presidential election?
Oh, my gosh. It is just insane. And I think that's what's so exciting is this is the first time that a lot of people who are not in the political game are actually interested at all of the process. And everywhere I go, I see Obama signs, and I just hear a lot of discussion. And especially with the whole civil rights aspect here, a lot of people have been concerned, and they feel that the civil rights leaders have sort of turned their back on Obama, and especially having spent so many years focusing on race, and they kind of feel like this is your chance to support a black man, and they feel like there's a lot of sentiment that that people are being very political and not taking this opportunity.
Well, we're definitely going to talk more politics always, but I want to get to some local issues, to the issue of the FEMA trailers. But we have to take a short break first, so stay with us, Erin, Katie, and Chandra. This is our Reporters Roundtable. We are speaking with Erin Aubrey Kaplan, who writes for the LA Times opinion page, Katie Rechtall, who reports for the New Orleans Times-Picayune, and Chandra Thomas, who writes for Atlanta Magazine. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We're back for more of our Reporters Roundtable. I'm with Erin Aubrey Kaplan of the LA Times, Katie Rechtall of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, and Chandra Thomas of Atlanta Magazine. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So I want to talk about some presidential politics in a second, but first, News and Notes has kept an eye on folks living in FEMA trailers in New Orleans and Mississippi. We heard last fall that high levels of formaldehyde were a threat in those trailers. A new report from the Centers for Disease Control says the levels are so high that occupants need to be relocated. And Katie, you have been on the ground reporting on this story. What do we know about this situation?
Well, last fall, there was a big push by FEMA to get a lot of the residents from the FEMA trailer parks here in New Orleans out in a very quick manner. They were giving notice in 30 days notice, weren't helping a lot of people find apartments in a really tight affordable housing market. There was a lot of speculation there that it was because of the formaldehyde and that was what was moving people out so quickly. So I don't think it comes as a lot of surprise to people that the formaldehyde levels, that the tests show how high they are. One of the things that I note is that the tests were done in December when the temperatures are lower and the formaldehyde levels tend to be higher in warmer weather. So I think we in the middle of the summer, we probably were in deep trouble here. And we were I know that local advocates here were trying to get those trailers tested and just could not get them tested. So there's a lot of suspicion about what exactly FEMA knew and when.
Chandra, when you think about this story, which has not affected Atlanta or Georgia directly, but certainly in the sense of southern states looking at New Orleans and what has happened post-Katrina, is there a sense of sadness that these troubles continue?
Yeah, actually, Atlanta is one of the top places that a lot of Katrina victims moved to. And I think that people are very disappointed. And I think that they feel that this has been a very just a disturbing, I guess the Katrina situation just seems to get worse and worse, and it just seems like it's kind of shed this light kind of on the government and how they respond to issues.
Erin, is this issue going to play out more nationally, or is this something, in your opinion, that's going to be more localized? I mean, Katrina has gone on and off the radar many times. John Edwards, who has officially not dropped out of the race, but who has suspended his campaign, made a big deal of going down to New Orleans, and many of the candidates have. But is this still playing big on the national screen?
Oh, I think so. In Los Angeles, there's a huge contingent of New Orleans transplants. My family is one of them. So it's been watched very closely with what's happening in Louisiana. And also the publisher of the local African-American paper, the LA Sentinel, is from New Orleans. So there's a lot of interest in what goes on. And, it's just another unfortunate symbol of what's happened or not happened since Katrina. It's been, more than 2 years now? And it's like adding injury to insult. The trailers, which were inadequate to begin with, which people were being forced to leave anyway, are now we know that they are, potentially lethal. And it's just, one more piece of evidence that the government is simply not on top of this and continues to not be on top of it. And so we have another potential problem we'll have to deal with if we ever deal with it. It's all very, frustrating, to say the least.
Katie, how are people thinking about engaging in the political process at this point, given how many local and regional problems there are? Do you get the sense that people from New Orleans are engaged around the presidential election?
I do. I mean, I think New Orleans is a very political town. And when on election day, the green spaces between the streets, which we call neutral grounds, are crammed with election signs. So people are really engaged. A lot of, I think like every place else, there's just a lot of fervor and excitement about Obama.
I want to move on to some presidential politics. The president has scheduled a trip to Africa, and he plans to highlight his work on AIDS and malaria and to push a plan for good governance. He's using this visit to highlight the softer side of foreign policy. Erin, why do you think that's the case?
Well, to kind of try to prove that there is a softer side to his foreign policy. I don't think a lot of people believe that. Even when he came out with his AIDS package back when he first became president, there were some, many complaints at the time that it was just not enough. He has not been, to say the least, he's not been a presence in Africa. He hasn't been seen not to be concerned with it. When he went to, he's been visiting several countries in the last year. He went to the Middle East, and people just kind of shrug their shoulders and see him as a lame duck president who is just kind of putting out way too little, much too late.
Chandra, he has said, the president has said, that he's willing to delay his trip to put his weight behind a plan to extend government surveillance, a program that's stuck in Congress. Now, Congress isn't even in session next week. Does that show a lack of commitment to really engaging with Africa, or is he just protecting his interest in this, you know, this fierce battle over wiretapping?
I think there's definitely a lot of sentiment that this trip is sort of for face value. And if you recall, he's actually delayed other trips to Africa kind of in the same sentiment. And I just think that some of it actually has to do with the current election is kind of creating this illusion that there is an interest in Africa. And also, I think he's trying to soften the blow of this perception that the Bush administration does not care about the international community. And that's obviously a lot of fallout during his administration. And I really feel that his constant attempt at pushing off the trip, it kind of contradicts the whole point of the trip, which is to show that you do care, but you have said that you would prefer to focus on your own bill and focus on this eavesdropping program.
Katie, when you look at the situation with the president's trip to Africa, you know, this bill has been associated, the bill in Congress has been associated with anti-terrorism efforts. Now the U.S. is looking at terrorism that's based on the continent of Africa. Do you think that that links together at all in terms of, you know, the foreign policy aspect also having an edge of anti-terrorism?
I think Bush likes to put anti-terrorism into everything. It's like his seasoning that he likes to put into everything. And I know that there's been speculation about whether he's specifically delaying this trip because it's Africa and he hasn't spent a lot of time or interest in Africa. But, I mean, I almost feel like he might even delay one of his Texas vacations to fight for wiretapping. He's just so crazy about terror, and his fervor on terror is so clear that I think that's the story out of this, to me at least. He is willing to do almost anything to really fight for his particular point on terror.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Katie Rechtall reports for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Aaron Aubrey Kaplan writes for the Los Angeles Times opinion page. And Chandra Thomas writes for Atlanta Magazine. And they all join me by phone.